all Americans know who Harriet Tubman is, but our knowledge of her really, except for scholars, is very shallow. So that was exciting just to kind of delve into those histories and figure out how to put it all together and make her come to life as an actual living human being.
That's Dorothy Wickenden, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Dorothy Wickenden has served as the executive editor of The New Yorker since January 1996. She also writes for the magazine and is the moderator of its weekly podcast, The Political Scene. She joins us to talk about The Agitators, three friends who fought for abolition and women's rights. Dorothy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let's start with what piqued your interest in these three women. What inspired you to write the book?
It was serendipitous, really. I was working on my previous book, Nothing Daunted, which was about my grandmother who grew up in Auburn, where the three women of this book came together. And I'd never been to Auburn before, but I went to check on her statement to me that her grandparents had lived next door to William H. Seward and his wife. So I went to the Seward House Museum, it is now a museum, and checked that fact. It turned out to be true. And then I got a tour of the house, and I learned from the young education director. She took me downstairs, the steep flight of stairs into the original basement kitchen, and she started telling me about Frances Seward, the wife of the famous statesman, and how, contrary to how she had been portrayed in just about every biography of her husband, she was an agitator against slavery and against the degradation of women. And I just found that fact really interesting. And in the basement kitchen, she showed me that that was where Frances Seward in the 1850s had harbored fugitive slaves on the Underground Railroad, and told me that around the corner, her closest friend lived, the only other outlier in town, and that was Martha Coffin Wright, a Quaker with six young children, who was even more of an agitator than Frances was. She was very outspoken and funny. And the two of them together began conspiring in the 1840s against these two terrible conditions in America. And eventually they were introduced to Harriet Tubman, of all people, by Martha's older sister, who lived in Philadelphia and met Harriet Tubman there through abolitionist circles. And that was the beginning of a very long, intimate friendship and collaboration among the three women.
Of course, Harriet Tubman is well known, but Martha Wright and Frances Seward are not. What do you think that is?
I think it's because women's history, and of course, Black Americans' history, has been overlooked until very recent years. And I was surprised, actually, when I began. I thought, well, maybe I'm alone in not having heard of these two other women. But when I began looking around in the archives, and I called up the curator at the University of Rochester Library, which is where all of the Seward papers are kept. And I asked about Frances Seward's letters. And I said, are they part of the collection? And the curator said, yes, they are. And when they were donated to the library in the 1850s, Frances's letters were set aside as worthless. And that, of course, to a reporter and someone who was interested in history was an impetus to look further. And as it didn't take me very long when I went to see that these letters were a huge repository of a completely different perspective on the antebellum years and the Civil War years.
So I want to learn more about the research. You were able to go back and find letters. Tell us more about the research you did for this book.
Yes. So I began with Frances's letters. And as I said, those were just absolutely sensational because she wrote to her husband usually three or four times a week. She stayed in Auburn while he was first a senator in Washington and then Secretary of State to Abraham Lincoln. And then I was interested in Martha Coffin Wright. And one book had been written about her by an academic couple some years ago. And it provided, it quoted letters from Martha to her older sister, Lucretia Mott, who was a very well-known Quaker minister and early advocate for women's rights and the abolition of slavery. And so I could tell from this book that those letters, too, would be revelatory. They are in the collection at Smith College, which is called the Sophia Smith Collection. And I went there, too, and started looking further into those letters. And Martha had what William Lloyd Garrison, the famous abolitionist and a close friend of hers, described as a pungent wit. And it absolutely, she's very funny and very scathing. And Frances, in her own way, is very scathing, too. And letters are such a wonderful resource for a writer because the writers of the letters feel very open to say whatever they like. And otherwise, women at the time were silent. They were not allowed to speak in public. They were seen as basically the handmaidens to their husbands and the caretakers of their children. So those letters, too, were just, you know, endlessly fascinating and provided really an inside-out history of this period in America that was absolutely transformative. And these women had not only ringside seats in these dramas, they were activists actively promoting really a revolution, two revolutions. And when they met Harriet Tubman in the 1840s, here was this woman who had walked out of slavery on her own all the way from the eastern shore of Maryland to Philadelphia. And she embodied to them everything that they believed about what had to happen in order to fulfill the ideals of the Declaration of Independence. And she was just an absolutely, you know, phenomenal figure and brilliant strategist. And she told them, she couldn't read or write, but she told them and she told all of her other friends in Philadelphia, New York State, and Boston. She was very good at making friends with important people. And she told all of them the story of her life, which ended up being even more fascinating after her 10 years of work on the Underground Railroad, when she brought more than 70 people out of slavery. And then during the war, she went down and became basically a spy master in South Carolina, Union-occupied South Carolina, where she helped to rescue some 750 slaves and worked very closely with the Union officers there to determine where the rebel positions were. You know, she really knew how to infiltrate enemy territory. So that, too, is just an incredible story. And of course, all Americans know who Harriet Tubman is, but our knowledge of her really, except for scholars, is very shallow. So that was exciting just to kind of delve into those histories and figure out how to put it all together and make her come to life as an actual living human being.
As you were looking at the history of these three women, were there things that surprised you about these women?
Well, I think one of the things that fascinated me about Frances Seward is that she was a very cerebral, introspective woman who didn't, on the surface, suggest that she would become who she ended up becoming. And it was throughout her life; it was always through her husband. Martha ended up breaking out and becoming a speaker at anti-slavery conventions and women's rights conventions. She worked side by side with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and William Lloyd Garrison and Susan B. Anthony. Frances remained quite quiet, but that didn't mean that she wasn't doing everything she could in the ways that she knew how to do them. So she worked surreptitiously through her husband. She was actually sort of his conscience as he was desperately trying to keep the country from splitting apart. And she kept writing these letters saying, you must continue to pursue, you know, to every extent possible, your anti-slavery beliefs, which means abolition now, not in the future, now. And so the letters between the two of them are just, you know, crackling with intensity. And it's also a story, of course, about their marriage. So she changed more than the other two, I would say. And to watch her, and she came from a very aristocratic family. She inherited a great deal of money from her father. She had a house full of servants. So here was this woman who, it took a lot for her to break away from all of these strictures that she had been brought up to believe in. And, you know, what was womanly and what wasn't womanly? And to see her come to terms with what she believed America had to do is really fascinating, I thought.
Now, these three women fought for abolition and women's rights, as you pointed out, two different causes. But at this point in history, society at large obviously was fighting against these changes. But I'm wondering if it was just these women and other women of like mind were seeing that these two issues, these two causes were actually very much interrelated.
Yes, absolutely. Although, as you say, this was both of these. So the abolitionist movement began before or became more public before the women's rights movement did. Although women like Martha's older sister, Lucretia Mott, were working in the 1830s side by side with William Lloyd Garrison and other abolitionists who polite society, which was, you know, and the rest of America, especially the South, saw as extremely dangerous. And it was a tiny number, but they received disproportionate attention because really they were advocating revolution. So these early women learned who were so active and were not allowed at that point in the 1830s to join the American Anti-Slavery Society, which was run by Garrison, because they were men and women did not, you know, work together in those days. So they formed the women formed their own anti-slavery societies in Philadelphia, Boston, Salem, and other cities. And so that movement came along a little bit later. It took a little bit longer for them to figure out how to do it, but they received a lot of encouragement from the abolitionists, and their speakers at their conventions were people like William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, and others who encouraged the women to do everything they could on both fronts. And so the women eventually decided that women deserved equal rights, just as every African American deserved equal rights. And they saw just how much they had been, their ideals had been, and their lives had been crushed by the privileged white man, as we would put it today, who founded America. And so they just decided that they had to do this on their own. And when women started holding these conventions, they were even more reviled than the abolitionists, which is really something. And so it was very tough. I mean, there were people, and inevitably there were people in the audiences who threw Bibles at them, and mobs formed outside their meeting houses and waited for them when they came out and threatened their lives. This was really a very tumultuous time. But it grew in the 1850s, especially after the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act. It became more and more people in the North, and after the publication of Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, people became much more aware of slavery and more willing to put themselves forward in that way. Even formerly conservative Northerners found this outrageous, as they were educated by the abolitionists and the women's rights advocates. They didn't always approve of everything they did, but they became more and more uncomfortable with the continuing presence of slavery and with Southerners' determination to spread the institution across the country. And to your listeners in Kansas, Kansas played an absolutely pivotal role in all of this. And people know about Bleeding Kansas in the mid-1850s as settlers from the Northeast went out to Kansas and settled in Lawrence, and as Southerners and Missourians made it their mission to people the territory with pro-slavery settlers. And so in Kansas, it became a battle between pro-slavery and anti-slavery people. And that, to me, was the early beginnings of the Civil War.
The book is The Agitators. It's by Dorothy Wickenden, Three Friends Who Fought for Abolition and Women's Rights. What do you hope that readers will take away from this book?
I hoped, and I am already seeing that readers immediately see the contemporary resonance in what these women and their associates did. And so, you know, you see it every day. I mean, Martha Coffin Wright in 1840 was telling her husband that women deserved equal pay because they were paid their seamstress so much less than they paid the man who did the outside work with her husband. And of course, her husband, who was a lawyer and he was an abolitionist, but he just thought that was preposterous, that women should earn equal pay. Well, here we are today, and women, especially women of color, are not earning equal pay. And so the fight goes on, and this is where it all began. And you see Black Lives Matter and the continuing suppression of the vote. And again, these people in this key period of American history began the civil rights movements that we know today. And we saw them resurface in the 1960s, and we see them today in all of these grassroots movements that are continuing to fight against some of the very conditions that these women were fighting against. You know, you see it with the Me Too movement and the ongoing fight for women not to be, battered to death by their husbands. That was something that Frances learned personally through her sister, who was being battered by her husband in the 1820s and 30s.
So sadly, there's still a lot of work to be done.
There is a lot of work to be done. And we saw that on January 6th when the Capitol was attacked by a mob.
Again, the book is The Agitators, Three Friends Who Fought for Abolition and Women's Rights. It's by Dorothy Wickenden. Dorothy, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.